say? What do you want me to say about you? He said, I don't know. So how many of you are not already aware of Robert's resume? Yeah, well, okay. Besides being one of the original bloggers in the world, and now considered one of the A-list bloggers, he is Microsoft. I would say you are Microsoft's top blogger, and have been a significant PR asset to that organization. And it's so nice to see one of the good guys win. Because Robert is also, I had a chance to work with him very closely a couple years ago when our two companies came together, and it was a joy, because you don't meet many people in life with a passion and an interest and an intelligence.
You're not telling the truth.
It's true. Oh, come on. It's true. It is true. The only thing that disturbs me is he's a little upscale. His dress is a little upscale today. So I hope you're not getting too corporate. But anyway, I apologize. I don't want to eat into your time. I would like to now introduce and welcome Mr. Robert Scoble. Robert.
So over the weekend, we had a big party at my house, and I brought some of the cheese and some of the wine. Did I not turn on this thing? Oh, sorry. It takes 2 seconds for you to hear me. Sorry about that. So over the weekend, we had a party at my house for my 40th birthday, and I brought some of the wine and some of the cheese and some of the food. And the reason I brought these things was to pontificate a little bit about the importance that how this all came into my life, right? My wife found this winery over the internet. She found... We went to dinner at this winery, Windy Point Vineyards, and met Jessica Smith, who was a cook at our party. And another guy, Rick Schott, bought me some cheese over the internet. And everything in my life lately has been coming to me because of the internet. All the relationships in this room are happening because of the internet. And that's what I want to talk about today. It's interesting, if we were at a gold mining convention, you know, and I would be up here talking about explosives, right, or some new drill technique, or a new tool to let us dig out more gold for less money. And that's really what blogging is today. It's just a tool. It's a tool for us to communicate. It's also a tool for us to build momentum, build movements. I mean, you watch how Firefox has spread throughout the world so fast. What, 12 million users, right? MSN Spaces 6 weeks ago opened. They have 1.75 million blogs now. I'm going to go through the room and talk about some of the stories I have here. But first slide, I wanted to talk about bootstrapping. Because when I worked for Steve 4 years ago, and we were planning a conference much like this one, the CNET Builder.com Live conference, and I had a relationship network. You know, much like the blogs are today, but smaller. And I would email this relationship network and say, hey, what should we cover at the conference in December? You know, this was probably in March or April. So it takes 6 months for a conference really to happen. And two people wrote me back and said, oh, you should do blogging, Dave Weiner and Dory Smith. And I write about that on my blog. And I said, what the heck is blogging? You know, because back then, in 2000, there was maybe 300, 500 tech bloggers. It wasn't there was not Technorati. There was no Feedster.com. There was no PubSub.com. There was a page called Weblogs.com. In fact, let me just switch over here. There was this page called Weblogs.com, which the logo's not loading. And one day I got to go over and watch Dave Weiner and how he does scripting.com, scripting news, his famous blog. And he was refreshing this page every 15 minutes and visiting every single link on it. Back then, there wasn't that much traffic, right? You know, the average weblog day would have maybe 400 posts, 1,000 posts. You know, so one human being could visit every single weblog on this page. Today, you see in just the past minute, there's hundreds of weblogs that have just posted in the past minute, and goes on and on and on. So you need tools like Technorati and PubSub to help you deal with this page. But this page is the root class of the blogosphere. It's where the blogosphere bootstrapped, and how Dave Weiner became a personality that most of us know. He's got news on his page faster than anybody else because he was visiting this page more often than anybody else, refreshing it and visiting everyone's link and looking for hot things that people were writing about. During 9/11, I was IMing and calling Dave and IMing with 31 people around the world. And he was watching this page, and we were both watching this page, actually, and having conversations. And anybody who blogged that disaster would show up here, and then we would link to them, and we would start building a network of people. Similarly, today, 3 years or 4 years later, we have the tsunami that happened last week. And we're doing the same thing, but we're not using this page. We're using Technorati. I use Technorati to search on earthquake or tsunami and bring back a large number of things. I guess it's good to talk about what is a blog, since we're going to go back into history, and why did it happen? Why is it hot? You know, my second slide is something about heat, if I remember right. Yeah, okay, we talk about the death of... keep going. What is a blog? I mean, to me, it's just a web page in reverse chronological order, with content in reverse chronological order. If you try to define it more than that, you get into arguments that just go nowhere. There are some common things, though, some things that are different about blogs than, let's say, a front page or a Dreamweaver site. I mean, back at the CNET conference, we were talking, you know, if you were there 4 years ago and this was the CNET conference, we were talking about XHTML was just starting to come out on the scene, and Molly could tell you all about that. We were using tools like Dreamweaver and FrontPage to build websites. But an interesting thing is FrontPage and Dreamweaver were hard to use comparatively to blogging. You know, my mom would never use FrontPage or Dreamweaver to build a site. She would be lost. You know, first of all, she had to get this app. Then she had to open it up and go new. And she had to design this thing. She had to understand something about the web, understand something about design, understand what she wanted to visually present herself as and what she wanted to say on the page. And then if she wanted to change that page, you know, you would have to come back to the app, open up the page, and then remove everything around. Well, with blogs, you just sign in to blogger.com or MSN Spaces or Typepad, and you type and you hit post, and it's live. So the first thing, there's five things. I give this talk called Why Weblogging is Hot. Now everybody here really knows it. But the first thing is it's easy to publish. And that ease of publishing is bringing millions of people into the blogging world and is letting us publish very, very, very rapidly, which is changing how we relate to each other, how we build relationship networks. The second thing is weblogging.com. For instance, on eBay's first day in business, they had zero traffic. So think about that. With a blog now, you go to blogger.com, you sign in, you post something. It pings weblogs.com. Your words show up in technorati.com and pubsub.com and feedster.com. People like me, if I'm searching for something that you're writing about, like tsunami, automatically get your weblog in, along with Reuters and AP. There's Joe Smith's new weblog. So somebody who has no traffic at all of a sudden is being discovered by connectors and people who are sifting, or journalists who are here. They're sifting for this information using these tools, and they're finding new voices, new people. Buzz Brueggemann can tell you about how a journalist... Buzz, are you here? There you are. When you were in the hurricane and you were writing on your blog about being in the Florida hurricane, who called you up?
Three
different newspapers, because they were doing searches on hurricane. They found your blog, and then they said, oh, he's a news source that we can call up. He's on the ground. He's in Winter Park, Florida, and we have a source, and I can write a story. What kinds of cities called you?
Providence Journal, St.
Okay, so Dallas. So a journalist is in Dallas covering the Florida hurricanes. Instead of having to spend a whole lot of money going to Florida and doing reporting, sitting in the Starbucks and talking to people, they just do some, you know, keyword searches and find Buzz Brueggemann and start calling him up. Death of distance. I mean, that's really the point of the death of distance, right? Last night, Buzz and I were sitting on my red couch, and we were talking to Cameron O'Reilly in Australia over Skype. You know, having, you know, he was drinking beer in Australia, and we were drinking on the red couch. And the death of distance has completely changed how we relate to each other, how we come together as groups. The third thing was linking behavior. In the old front page world, you know, when I had my NetMeeting site, which got a decent amount of traffic because I was good at promoting it and getting into all the search engines, you know, back then you had to go to AltaVista and add site. You know, the old timers remember that those days, but now you don't need to do that. Google watches the weblogs.com and comes along and finds your site. In the old days, I never got my refer list until the end of the month when my ISP report would come, and it would tell me, hey, you know, XYZ guy linked to you and sent you 400 visitors, and XYZ other person sent you 200 visitors. Now I have that tool in live time. So as soon as you link to me, I see you, and I can see how much traffic you're sending me. That lets me discover new people who are talking about me, and it lets me link back to them and have some sort of conversation. And that's really important for business. So you're going to learn about linking behaviors and how to build momentum and build conversations and avoid PR crises this week at the conference. And we're covering the why. I mean, the why is the five things. So number four is permalinking. In the old days when you went to CNET.com, there might have been a page with little micro stories, right? You know, one story about the new Mac Mini, one story about the new cell phone that came out, one story about the tablet PC, da da da. And if I knew, if I'm a connector kind of guy or a guy who likes to talk about technology with my friends, I might say to Buzz or to Dory, I might say, hey, on the third item, there's a story about a cell phone that I think you would be interested in knowing about. Well, just having to say that much in IM retards the viralness of ideas and information. Now, with permalinks, we just click on a little hash mark underneath my item or underneath most any item. In fact, MSDN now has permalinks in some places. And I can get a URL, I can copy that URL, and I can spread it via IM. And during the 9/11 stories, that's exactly what we were doing. Me and Dave were emailing each other back and forth, permalinks to individual items around the web, and it helps us build. It helped build this bootstrap, this blogosphere, and it helped virally spread it around. And that's why one of the reasons it's become so hot. The fifth thing was syndication, and maybe I should pull up my Outlook and show you what 1,020 feeds looks like. Hold on a second. I'll talk about that later on. So those five things. Syndication, by the way, lets me back in the 90s, you know, most of us only watched 5 to 10 sites. Even the high end web users would, you know, watch, you know, news.com, we'd go to eBay, we'd go to Amazon maybe once in a while. We might have another news site that we visit, like Slashdot or something like that. But we didn't have a lot of sites that we wanted to watch. As the blogosphere bootstrapped and started getting bigger and bigger, I and other users, and Dave Weiner knew this intimately because he was trying to watch a large number of people even earlier than I was, that I wanted to listen to a lot of voices. Because the more people who joined the blogosphere, the more interesting people were in the blogosphere. You know, I'm seeing a lot of people out here I enjoy reading. And the problem is the web browser just fell apart when you got over 30 or 40 bloggers that you're listening to or sites that you're listening to. And because of the ease of publishing, bloggers would be able to pour a lot of data into the network that wasn't happening on some of the commercial sites. I mean, if you go to, even today, if you go to the homepage of Apple.com or Microsoft.com, those pages don't change a lot. They don't have a lot of new content that you need to revisit or keep in track of. So Dave Weiner and Netscape and a few other guys invented this thing called RSS. It's interesting, those five things, by the way, are the order in which I discovered them. So the first thing I discovered was ease of publishing. Then I discovered, oh, I get discovered automatically. And, you know, Dave Weiner discovered me within a couple days of my blogging because he was watching weblogs.com. And I got traffic without asking for it. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I discovered the ability to watch my refer page live. I was like, wow, I can have conversations across domain and I can hook up with other people who are talking about the same kinds of things that I'm interested in. And I can pass this stuff around on IM, which was big back then. I mean, ICQ back by 2000, I'd already had a million, you know, million or 2 million or 20 million downloads, whatever it was. And then about a year and a half later, I discovered syndication because my web browser just fell apart. I could not keep up with the number of voices I wanted, the number of people I wanted to read, and the aggregator let me read, you know, 20 to 30 times more people and more sites and keep up with them. And there's some real good reasons. For one, let me just pull it up and so you can see. Yeah, hold on a second. It takes a little while. One of the reasons is I don't need, if you're visiting in a web browser and you're visiting my site or you're visiting, you know, the Engadget weblog or whatnot, and you have to actually load that page up. If you're loading 1,000 pages and they take an average of 8 seconds a piece to load, it takes a couple of hours just in loading time every night to load the page up. I don't need to load it. I have a local aggregator that goes off, and every couple hours, it goes and sucks all the weblogs down. And great. Outlook's not coming up. Hey, you know, if Bill Gates can crash on stage, so can I. anyway, so I don't need to load up all the blogs while I'm reading them. My aggregator goes when I'm off at lunch and loads them up, or at night, you know, goes and loads them up. Or even the way I read them now, I just, at 5 o'clock, I hit manually. I don't do automatic pulling because I don't want to put a lot of strain on the network. I just manually go and tell it start getting all of my feeds, and it takes maybe half an hour or 15 minutes to go and get all my feeds. And then, you know, at 5:30, I'm ready to start reading. Everything's local, so when I click on it with my pen, it comes up instantly. Number two, I only need to read the sites that have changed in the past 24 hours. And there's a little dirty secret. You guys only publish, 30 or 40% of you only publish something in the past 24 hours. So if I'm reading on a regular basis, I'm only needing to read, you know, out of 1,000 sites, I'm only needing to read 200 to 400 sites every night. Where if you're visiting in a browser and you want the same information I have, you have to actually visit all 1,000 sites. And then you have to actually parse that page and say, what changed here? What's new? And like if you go to MSDN's homepage, it's a confusing page. It's hard to figure out. You have to spend some mental energy to figure out what changed on that page. And I don't need to do that because you know, when I go into my aggregator, what's new is bold, and the new items are bold. I only need to read the new things. I don't need to read the old things. So this is what 1,000 feeds look like. And you can see, actually, I read through the feeds at 7 this morning and caught up. So these are new guys who just published in the past 2 hours, something like that. So where are we? So Passion Concentrator. I watched Howard Dean build this movement. And I noticed that passionate political people were flying in and concentrating on the candidates' blogs. And the bloggers, you know, and I notice it myself on my blog, anybody who's really passionate about technology checks me out. Whether they like or hate Microsoft, they check me out. Or they check Jonathan Schwartz out at Sun, or they check out the MSDN blogs, or they check out Buzz Brueggemann because they might have seen him on a Google search. But because of Google, because of our searching behavior now on the internet, where the blogs are building concentrations of passionate people. And that's actually an interesting trend to look at, because the blogosphere and the mainstream world are different. And if you forget that they're different, all you have to do is look out and see all the Apple logos and realize that this is a little bit different. It's a very passionate audience, and the passionate audience is often different than the mainstream audience that doesn't really care about politics. You know, if you go out to average Joe on the street, they're not going to be, you know, spending 40 hours or even quit their job and go and work for a candidate the way that some of the bloggers in the blogosphere did. Anyways, what I'm noticing is many of the blogs are building concentration engines. What you'll do is, if you go into the common area of some blogs or many blogs, you'll see the most passionate people on that topic. If you go to the auto blog, you'll see people who are over the top crazy about cars and just want to be part of that conversation. That's where hype comes from. That's where the journalists hang out now. Because the journalists realize that the most passionate people in the society are the ones who are changing the society, who are driving it forward, who are coming up with the new ideas, and who are discovering the new ideas. You know, I'm not a guy who invents things. I know a few people who invent things. But I'm a guy who likes to be near the inventor because I'm passionate about what they're inventing for me. And there's a lot of people like me. And so when you go to these tech sites like Engadget, you'll see, you know, 50,000 or 100,000 people who are reading those blogs and are concentrated there. And if you're a press person, you can watch this little world for ideas. And occasionally, one of them will spin off. Podcasting, for instance, in July of last year, you know, Dave Weiner and Adam Curry came up with this idea called podcasting. It really was a series of things that had been building up. I mean, there's been audio blogs for a while, or audio sites for a while, like, you know, .NET Rocks, or, you know, Chris Perillo's played with audio, Web Talk Radio. I mean, I talked to Rob Greenlee. Rob, are you here? I'm not sure if he's here this week. But Rob Greenlee was at my party on Saturday, and he's been, you know, doing audio streaming casts on the net for 5 or 6 years. So, but because of this concentration of very passionate people, and the press are watching this concentration, when something interesting happens and a lot of and the passionate ones all freak out about it and go, oh, that's cool, the journalists then can spin that idea out into the mainstream and say, hey, something happened here. You know, the iPod happened here, and which didn't happen in blogs, but it happened in the same way that, you know, the passionate people chose a product. Podcasting certainly happened. Certainly the tsunami. I was watching news stories go from the tsunami, from the blogs, into the mainstream press in 24 hours now. So the adoption cycle, the cycle between, you know, the early adopters and somebody in the mainstream press hearing about it is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, which portends some ways that the company I work for better change. Because if a product sucks, the world is going to know about it in 24 hours or less, right? We all know, you know, I mean, my boss was at the Macworld convention and went to the store right after Steve Jobs' keynote and bought a shuffle. You know, and there was thousands of people who were doing the same thing. Within a few hours, you know whether product is good or not. Because your friends who are the early adopters, who are the crazy ones, the passionate ones, are going to buy that product and try it out. Halo 2, I was doing searches on Halo 2, and people were in store at midnight, because I was in store in one of the lines in Silicon Valley, and people, when I got home at 1:30 in the morning, there was already hundreds of blog posts about Halo 2 saying, holy crap, this is the coolest thing I've ever played, and you guys got to get on the boat. And yeah, we sold a couple million that first night, but over the next I think, 2 months, we've sold more than 6 million copies. The amplification effect of that is what's selling products. I mean, how many people know what the Scoble phone is? You know, it's not because I endorsed it. It's because I talked about it, and then 15 other people in the blogosphere talked about it, and I keep linking to them. It's that amplification effect that tells you whether a product is good or not and worthy to look at. So results. How do you? We're going to have several sessions here on how to, measure your ROI if there can be a thing. I keep, people tell me why should I blog? Why should I blog? There's no ROI there, And I'm saying, well, interesting, because Bill Gates spends an ungodly amount of fuel in his jet to go to the CES and talk to 4,000 people in front of, at CES. We spent millions of dollars on our professional developer conference, which had, 7,000 attendees, right? I have more people reading me every day than that on my blog, and it takes, 3 hours of investment. And I get to talk to these 10,000 people, the people in this room, every day, and I don't need to spend the millions of dollars to go to a conference necessarily to speak to them. And that's the way the new business is. I mean, you go back to a winery, right? Or if you're a cheesemaker, how do you build a business? How do you get known? How do you start differentiating yourself? Because I guarantee you go to Safeway and you find hundreds of bottles that look similar to this one and taste pretty similar to this one. Steve Brobeck can tell you the difference. I can't tell you the difference between most wines unless it's a really good one next to a really crappy one. I can tell that, but I can't, most wines, like from Napa, you go to Napa, they're all good wines. I can't tell the difference, really, other than subtle things. So I'm not going to go into results, but you can, one way with Channel 9, one way I'm quantifying my work is to use Technorati, and use linking. So if I get 500 links this month, and I got 300 last month, well, then I can show my boss, hey, I'm getting more and more discussion, so the conversation's more interesting. Or I can look at traffic, or I can look at sales, right? I know I've sold dozens of these smartphones, because I know, Greg Reinecker, who's the CEO of NewsGator, said, I bought one because of your blog, and because of the other bloggers who were amplifying your message, amplifying that the product was good. And how many people here have an Audiobox, by the way? Not yet. Mark Cannard back there? Yeah, interesting. If in some of the geek dinners I've been at, there's been a lot more. Influence. I forget where I was talking about that. Influence is the first thing I tell people when they say, well, how do I start a blog? I say, read 50 blogs for 2 weeks. Subscribe to blogs that you care about. Find them on PubSub or Technorati. If you're a quilter, go to Technorati and search on quilting. You'll find hundreds of people who talk about quilting. I mean, it's amazing. I was blown away when I was giving this talk at MSN and trying to explain the blogging thing, and I thought, oh, the blogosphere is only tech guys, But I started doing some searches on quilting and cars, and it's amazing, Buzz, what searches were we doing last night? We did searches on NASCAR. There's blogs on NASCAR. The NASCAR has a blog and has hundreds of fans of people. I mean, you just do random searches on random things. Wine. There's hundreds of blogs now on wine. Steve Brobeck, in fact, is starting a whole site about Seattle wine and where to find the best glass of wine for the cheapest price. And he's having a group blog kind of thing. What my point here was to listen to what the market is saying about your product. If you're a plumber in Seattle, try to find other plumbers who are writing. And if there isn't anybody out there, you're actually ahead of the game because of the linking behaviors of the web, your searches will come up higher in Google. So if you're the first Seattle plumber and you're Napsterizing your knowledge, you're sharing your knowledge, you're telling people how to change a spigot on a sink, people who are interested in plumbing will find you that way. We'll search, you know, I need a plumber in Seattle. My basement is leaking, you know. I had that happen recently, so I know exactly what I did. You know, I went looking for Seattle plumbers, and I looked for people who had knowledge and who looked different, who were sharing their knowledge and demonstrating that they were an authority on plumbing. I mean, I tell people there's two things that make a good blog: passion and authority. Passion is, you know, how often you post, how excited are you, you know, do you go to industry events and try to learn something new? If you're an auto blogger, you know, you better be at the Detroit Auto Show. That's passion. That, you know, if you say, well, I'm going to just sit home and read an auto blog, well, you're not going to be one of the guys who sticks out in my mind as passion. I mean, I met a guy who had a Chrysler Prowler, I think it is, not Chrysler, Plymouth Prowler. And this guy was so passionate and so authoritative about that car, he knew how much each of the union workers were paid. He knew how many workers were on the factory line. He knew how many janitors cleaned the line every night. This is a car owner, not somebody who worked at Plymouth, right? He knew the color of paint that the factory floor was painted with. He knew how many cars were built. He knew when they made electronic changes in the car from year to year and what they were. He knew the wheel styles, and he knew all sorts of people. He knew executives, and talking to this guy for half an hour, I was ready to go buy one, right? And that's the kind of person who makes a great blogger, somebody who's really passionate, and then somebody who's really authoritative. He had done custom modifications to his car. He had been in online forums and been, writing articles and discussing things and showing people how to improve their car. And he was demonstrating at the Reno Hot Nights, where all the dragsters come out. And, you know, you could tell he was sharing his passion and his authority. And that's what I was looking for when I buy wine. You know, I met the owners of this winery, and they were passionate. I had dinner with them. They were seeped in wine. They knew everything about the Yakima Valley vineyards, and they knew, they had other winemakers at their dinner, you know, and so they knew, you know, the advantages of each person's crop and what it would taste like, and if I could buy some grapes from this person and mix it with this person's, I could make a better wine. But you spent an evening with them, and you instantly knew that they were authoritative and they were passionate about the topic. And that's what makes a great blog. That's what I look for when I'm looking for a wine or looking for a plumber. And I'm sure you're starting to see traffic and business and opportunities come to you through Google and through MSN and Yahoo search engines because people are out there looking for help. You know, I mean, if you're looking for a plumber, what choices do you have? You can play Russian roulette in the Yellow Pages, right? You open up the plumbing, who has the biggest ad or who has the prettiest looking ad, but you really don't know how good that plumber is. You can ask your friends or family, but I don't have any friends or family up here in Seattle, so I didn't have that network of people to ask, especially when my basement was leaking and I needed somebody like in an hour. Or you can go to Google and start doing some searches, you know. And there are some associations that people should join, you know, that help make you more visible. But when I'm on Google, I'm looking at Plumbing Seattle, Plumber Seattle. You know, my basement is leaking, Seattle. Yeah. I mean, you can just brainstorm some searches to find some things fast, and then you're comparing these guys, and like, okay, this is an... In fact, let's just do it, just for fun. Just to see what comes up. You know, the problem is there's all these intermediaries, and how do you become, Seattle Plumbing, Seattle Plumber? The problem is, how do you stick out, you know? What I'm looking for is somebody who has a site that teaches me how to do plumbing. You know? Here's how to change your own, how to fix a leak in your basement. And that sounds counterintuitive. There's some counterintuitive things about blogging. I remember my boss used to say, don't link outside of Fawcett. Don't link outside of our world. You know, don't link to anybody who's not a partner. Well, somebody comes along and says, hell with that rule. I'm going to link to everything. He's more authoritative. Same thing, somebody just the other day told me, my boss, I'm interviewing for this new job, and I asked, can I blog here? And the guy who was interviewing said, no, you can't blog here. I'm paying for your brain, and I'm going to, and I don't want you to give away your knowledge or your stuff out on the internet for free. I want to charge for that. But when I'm looking for a plumber, I'm looking for somebody who is authoritative and knowledgeable. So I'm looking for somebody who shares their knowledge in the public sphere, who you know, has pictures about how to fix a leak, and you know, who writes every day, and I can go to their website and click around and see that, oh, this guy writes a lot on plumbing, and he links to his competitors. Well, that's a weird one. He links to his competitors and talks nicely about them. So if I don't like this guy, he tells me who else is out there and what else they can do. I learned this trick at working at a camera store in the 1980s. You know, sometimes I just couldn't take care of a customer. You know, sounds like camera's great. You know, Keeble and Schecke is great. And I would tell them, you know, what the advantages of each store. Invariably, they'd come back and go, you know, those other stores weren't as nice as you. They weren't as authoritative as you. They weren't as interesting as you. So we'll buy the product from you. You go deal with it. And of course, I'd go to Sounds Like Cameron, buy it, and charge them $20 more, you know, and keep the customer. But that's blogging. That's how you'll build a business. If you think you're only going to link to yourself or only going to, you know, tease people and not share information, you're not going to build the kind of linking behavior that's going to get you high on Google. You know, a plumber who does share his knowledge publicly will be found on Google by somebody like me, and somebody like me will link to him. You know, I've linked to things. I've linked to, you know, things I've bought, wine I've bought. This winery now, if you search on Yakima Valley Winery, is very high on Google. You know, why? They're a year old. They're not anything special. I mean, there's dozens of wineries in Yakima. Why is this one rated higher? Because somebody like me linked to them, you know. And same thing, you know, other people in this room, when you do linking, you raise their profile. That's sort of why I got in trouble with the no-follow link that Google just came out with, and now MSN and Yahoo have also searched it. I want to be able to link to certain things and say, no, they don't get Google juice. You know, a carpet store ripped off 200 people, I think, you know, a year ago, and I was involved with that. I almost got ripped off. I was pretty lucky. But there was this carpet store ripped off a bunch of people. I wanted to be able to link to that store and say, hey, check this store out. They're doing something really nasty. But I didn't want them to have their profile raised because there weren't very many carpet stores in Seattle. And if I linked to them and sent them Google juice, then every time somebody went to I'm looking for a carpet store in Seattle or a carpet store in Redmond, their store would be number one. I would be helping their store out by writing something negative about them. So by using the nofollow link now, I can at least link to them and not send Google juice or send search juice to them. And a lot of people in the blogosphere really attack that opinion, but I'm not going to use nofollow for everything. You know, a lot of people said, oh, the blogosphere is going to die because of nofollow. Drives me nuts. I'm not going to use it for everything, and anybody who tries to use it for everything is going to get outed and going to create, you know, negative attention to themselves, and people won't link to them, you know, as payback. You know, we all pay back people who stab us in the back, right? You know, that's human nature. So if one guy is not linking out the right way, we're not going to link in the right way. You know? And so that's another thing. A lot of people say, oh, the blogosphere doesn't have ethics or doesn't have fact-checking or whatnot. It cleans itself out. I've watched this over and over. If there is somebody who lies to you or misleads the truth or tries to do something stupid, it might get covered. I mean, I've linked to hoax photos before, and I got taken. But within 4 or 5 hours, readers were writing me and saying, hey, that's a hoax, man. Didn't you? You're stupid. And I immediately wrote up and said, oh, my God, I just checked that out a little bit more, and it's not a real photo. Yeah. And even if I don't do that, the rest of the blogosphere will link in and say, hey, this one guy is not there. He's something's wacky about him. He's lying to us. It doesn't. His facts don't check out. It's number one rule on my corporate manifesto, web blogging manifesto, don't lie. You're going to get found out because there's smarter people in the audience than you are. There's more IQ here than there is here. There's more wealth here than there is here. There's more education here than there is here. You know, that's Dan Gilmore's line. And if you try to mislead the audience is going to start connecting through IM and the email, and it's going to figure you out. You know, Buzz has the famous story of being at PC Forum, and a speaker was up on stage. Who was it, Quattrone?
Joe Nachio,
right, yeah. And he was, you know, he was misleading the audience, you know, a little bit. And Buzz was in somewhere else, 1,000 miles away, doing some searches, and found on Yahoo Finance that this guy was telling a few fibs. And he emailed Dan Gilmore, who was in the audience, and started writing on his blog. And within a few minutes, the audience started to turn, and he didn't understand why. It's like, because I know all of you are connected. I wanted to put IRC up, by the way, and we can't use IRC on this wireless network, but I wanted to put IRC up and let you guys all chat behind my back, because that was a lot of fun at BloggerCon when people were chatting and telling, you know, this guy's full of it. let's see, momentum. Momentum, you really got to go back to the bootstrapping slide and watch what Dave Weiner did on building momentum around his technologies. I mean, if you visit engineers at Microsoft or anywhere else, they'll go, that technology he invents is not all that it's not fully baked, you know? It doesn't cover this edge case, and it doesn't cover this edge case, and it doesn't do this. Yeah, I mean, you've seen Atom come out of that, right? You know, Dave Weiner's full of it. His technology is not fully baked. It's not perfect. It's not engineering perfect. But what Dave did that most other technologists don't do is he evangelized the technology. He bootstrapped it. He built momentum. A little PR trick I tell people is, you know, identify a connector like Glenn Reynolds, who's a political connector, or Andrew Sullivan, or, you know, Engadget, Peter Rogers at Engadget. Those guys are really connectors. Peter Rogers doesn't write a lot of specs for cell phone companies. He doesn't build cell phones. He's a connector who connects people. You know, he connects Nokia with you with Nokia. You know, and a little marketing and PR trick is, you might be tempted to try to pitch Peter, right? Because he's the center of the network. He controls it. He's, you know, if I can talk Peter into covering my product, I'll be, you know, we'll sell millions. You know. I'd say, don't try to do that only. Yes, do try to pitch Peter. You know, when Peter's at demo and you're starting a new software company, pitch him, you know, definitely. But pitch 5 to 50 people around Peter who Peter trusts and reads and maybe aren't as famous as Peter, but Peter trusts them. And if they write about something or put a picture on their weblog, he's subscribed to, you know, a whole range of people. He'll put it on Engadget, you know, and he'll help the guy who he trusts by linking to him and saying, hey, you know, this guy just put up a picture of the new Nokia phone. You know, and it takes only 5, you know, I'm watching 1,000 feeds, it only takes 5 to get on my radar screen. When I see something talked about on 5 separate weblogs, it's like, wow, that's different. That's, something's happening. I better pay attention to it. You know, particularly the way I read every night through the feeds, and I can see repetition. Repetition's really important. You know, even in the cell phone, somebody just wrote, I bought a smartphone just because of the repetition, not because Scoble was talking about it, but because I saw Scoble and then this guy and then this guy and this guy write about something. So the PR trick is to get 5 people to write about something and start building a movement. Very few marketers really understand this. They expect to go into New York Times or do a press tour and get woofy immediately, you know. Well, that might work if you're Apple or Microsoft, right? And we have personal relationships with, you know, the big guys at Wall Street Journal, Walt Mossberg or Stephen Levy at Newsweek. You know, when I was working at Winov, I could never get those guys to return my calls, you know. But the way you get on their screen is to build a movement, right? You've seen the blogosphere build movement after movement. You know, Typepad started small. You know, ICQ started with 40 users. And they went up to 100 and something million downloads before they started petering out and other companies started taking their market away from them. You know, Firefox, you've seen. I mean, any product really that has become successful because of the word of mouth networks. I mean, 80% of my camera store sales were word of mouth, right? This was in the 1980s, before we had email, before we had IM, before we had blogging. And now that we have these things, the word of mouth networks are more and more and more efficient. So it takes less time, it takes less energy to build a movement, to build a major store, a major new product. I wanted to put a slide in here on fears, because I keep hearing them when I pitch blogs to people. You know, oh, if I blog, I'm going to get fired. Or if I blog, I'm going to look stupid. You know, get over it. I look stupid every day, right? You know, hasn't hurt me yet, you know. But just be, another one is, it takes too much time. I mean, what are some, join in here. What are some of the fears that you hear out there? You know, anybody?
People are
going
to say bad things about me. Yeah. People are going to say nothing.
Hey, you know, that's easy. That's easy because if you're interesting, they will say something about eventually. I mean, if you are having trouble getting discovered, come to some of the sessions later on or come and see me in the hall. There's some real easy tricks, you know, link out, you know. Figure out what people are searching for. Shel Israel is a big free press guy, and he just found that people aren't picking up on what he's writing, you know. But he keeps at it. He keeps writing about journalists who are getting thrown in jail. He keeps writing about, bloggers who get, you know, shot in Iran or whatnot. They just disappear, you know. And he keeps at it. And I said, keep at it, because someday somebody is going to do a Google search on press freedom, you know, or First Amendment rights, you know, and all of a sudden you'll be discovered. I mean, this is Chris Anderson's long tail argument, right? Don't worry about having only 5 listeners, you know. At some point, your thoughts, your thinking, your vision, your product idea might get discovered by somebody like Doug Rowan I'm staring at, who's an investor in the photo space, you know. And certainly people like me are looking to have conversations with guys like Doug about photos. So, you know, every time I have breakfast, I say, you know, hey, did you check out Flickr? Did you check out, you know, right? You know, I bring him a list, and he brings me a list, and that's how we learn things. That's how we share ideas and learn about new products, new services, new people, you know, interesting things going on. And I don't know. Any other fears out there that people are thinking of? Appear too candid? Yeah, transparency is a big one, especially in a big company. It's like, well, we want to be transparent, but we don't want to be transparent, you know. And it's like, no, go for it. You know, you'll create a movement by bringing people in the company. You know, that Plymouth Prowler guy, did he do any harm to Plymouth by telling me what the factory line worker was making and how many shifts were working? I mean, that's transparency into the company. That's, I remember meeting a customer evangelist at one of the Sonoma wineries. You know, she was there buying wine futures. So anybody who buys wine futures, you know they're a wine freak, right? Because I don't buy wine futures. You know, Steve, do you buy wine futures?
No.
Yeah, you're a freak. I know Steve's a freak about wine, and he doesn't even buy
wine. You look to me for wine. I look to you.
See how these relationship networks start building? Because now we know who to talk to about photos. We know who to talk to about wine. You know, and that's what blogging is. That's the magic. That's the, you know, if we want to go to the blog advantage, you start building these relationship networks where you can join in on something you care about. You know, if you care about cheese, there's a cheese blog, for God's sake. You know, if you are, one of my journalism professors was an obituary writer, and he cared about obituaries, and he would be reading the blog of death, I'm sure, you know, or writing it. I mean, he has a whole thing about how to write a good obituary. It's really interesting.
Robert, I've got a fear for
you. Yep.
How many people want, like right now, how many people would want to discover that 5 years ago on their blog they wrote how they went to a party and suddenly they had a bunch of fun dancing with Lombada?
I have a picture.
It's embarrassing previous life stuff.
Hey. Sometimes you can turn that embarrassing stuff into a career, right? You know, I told Bill Gates on my blog a couple of years ago to split up the company. You know, did that hurt me? In some instances, that might have. You know, but I think it gave me street cred that now transfers into Microsoft. You know, and being able to speak with you. I have naked pictures of myself that I took. You know, if you do some good Google image searches, you'll find them. They're not quite naked, but, you know. Hey, you know, when you're a marketing guy at a... When you're a marketing guy at a small company trying to build something... So, actually, we had a whole week called Love Manila Userland, and so I took a picture with my computer, you know, and said, Love Manila. Let it all hang out. Yep. If you study humans, right, we love stories. What makes a great story? You know, look at Star Wars. Was Star Wars all about one army that just owns everything? No, it was about conflict between good and evil, or conflict between two forces. You know, why did Darab Abizanjo and Adam Bosworth from Google get quoted in the Wall Street Journal? It wasn't because they were, you know, shaking hands on stage. They were throwing little barbs back and forth. There was conflict between two opposing viewpoints. And those viewpoints make great stories, and that's what gets people to visit your site and to, you know, find you, you know, because when somebody like me finds a story like that, we start IMing all of our friends. Look at these guys. They're fighting out in public. It's cool. Or, you know, now you can see products, right? The tablet PC versus the Apple PowerBook. And those are conflicting ideas about what the world should be like, you know, and that makes interesting stories. The winery, you know, I mean, good winemakers will tell you how they differentiate themselves and how they think differently than the other winery down the street. You know, I remember taking a tour, and the winemaker was explaining, I only put my wine in new oak because that makes it taste a little different. Here, try a wine from a new oak cask and see how it tastes a little different than my competition down the street. Well, this is what's going on. You know, good businesses do that. They try to differentiate themselves, try to find things that are special about them so that they can talk, that they can make stories that people talk about. That's the new marketing, is to figure out ways to get people to talk about you. You know, the King Kong blog, right? I'm thinking about King Kong movie now, because he's writing about it every day, giving a diary of what it's like to shoot and edit this movie and make this movie. And now I'm sort of becoming emotionally involved in the movie, and I'm going to go and see it. You know, so it'd probably be a successful movie opening, and if the movie sucks, I'm going to say that. But if the movie is good, then number one, he got an influential person into the movie theater, got him to start talking about it, and then on opening morning when I go and see the movie, I'm going to start blogging about it and say, hey, this movie actually lived up to the hype, you know? And that's what's going to kick in the exponential sales curve. You know, I can already guarantee Steve Jobs with The Incredibles is going to have an unbelievable DVD season. And I can predict it based on what I'm reading from you, because I still keep seeing Incredibles mentioned in my blog reading. Every week there's at least two or three people who said, I just saw Incredibles for the first time, and it is indeed incredible. I've never seen somebody say, I hated that movie. So that tells me that the word of mouth networks are spreading, you know, that movie around, and that hype about that movie will continue building even into the DVD season, and they're going to have an incredible movie opening at the DVD season. So that's one thing I'd watch my aggregator for, is trends. You know, what's happening out there? What are people talking about? What are people saying? And now, I guess what's next is attention overload, how to deal with it. You know, now that I'm watching 1,000 people, and I think in a year I'm going to be watching 3,000 people or sites or things. Because really, an RSS feed can be a company, can be a person, can be a product team. There's an IE blog, there's a Macromedia blog, there's a, you know, Apple has RSS feeds for iTunes now. Halo 2, when you shoot somebody in Halo 2, it actually spits that stat into an RSS feed, and you can, your friends can subscribe to your stats for your Halo 2 game. And people have already built Excel spreadsheet statistical analysis models so you can see how you're doing against your friends. I'm serious. There's a guy at Microsoft who wrote this Excel spreadsheet and does all this graphs and shows you how you're comparing to your friends. It's amazing. But that's, you know, that's the new world. That's what's coming at us. I was talking with the guy who owns the most patents at Microsoft, and he's studying ways to show priorities of emails. You know, so if I always answer Steve Brobak's email in 1 minute, that's metadata that he can start tracking and start making use of. And now the system can just put Steve Brobak's email to the top of the list because he knows that's the most the system knows that's the most priority email. And he's studying my link blog behavior now and trying to build patterns off that. Which are the web bloggers who are most likely to get up to the top? The reason he thinks he would do that, the reason I want it, one, I can't do this forever. You know, we all have an expiration date at some point in the future. So, you know, my knowledge, my talent or reading behavior or whatever can only happen for a number of years before I go away, right? So how can a system learn from my behaviors and start building patterns out there, and so that, you know, 50 years or 100 years from now, you can actually, you know, subscribe to my pattern. But the other reason is a lot of executives and people in this business tell me, I'm just too busy. I have 5 minutes to read the web at night, you know, or 15 minutes, you know. And so what we're trying to do now is build systems that predict what the most important thing is for that person to read. You know, if he only has 15 minutes to read the web, where I have 3 hours a night to read the web, so I can read 1,000 sites. Somebody who has only 15 minutes to read the web can then maybe read 50 sites, right? So you have to figure out what the most important 50 things are and bring that to his screen. And anyways, so do we have any questions?
I think we'll have to do questions offline because we're going to stick to the 10 a.m.
Okay.
Timetable.
Sorry.
But you're going to be around for a while, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be here the 2 days.
And I do want to interject that one of the most empowering things I discovered soon into blogging, there is this, and I'm going to show this at 2 o'clock at the beginning of our 2 o'clock session.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you were talking about consumer power, I've got something so cool to show you guys that enabled me as a power consumer. When I tried, it's a hotel situation, trying to talk directly to the hotel. The manager didn't work. Thanks to my blog, immediate satisfaction. And I will take that further because I think it's your obligation. I'm a very pragmatic capitalist. I'm not one of these idealist types, but I'll tell you, I think it is your obligation to blog, and I'll describe that later on. But let's take our break. We'll take 15 minutes, we'll come back,
Thank you.
Move into our next session. Thank you, Robert.